Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast Tuesday edition, because this is the final member of our power trio of NFL draft recap shows. I am your host, Gary Gremling. I am joined by the specialist guest I could think of, and that is Andy Benoit. If you go back one in your feed, you get the AFC rundown, all 16 teams in the AFC. We broke down all their draft classes. This is going to be the NFC. Right now, NFC, and the way we're going to do this, Andy, if you remember, as we said yesterday, we always feel bad for the divisions in the West because they're always last in these kinds of shows. So we are going to reverse it. We're going to do NFC West, then NFC South, then NFC North, then NFC East. And those guys in the East can wait for once. And within each division, we are doing alphabetical. So if you want to skip around the show, you can pretty much follow that map and just succeed in life. But Andy, are you ready to go here? Do we have any chit chat to do at the top?
No, I assume we're doing this order because the powers at the top reached out to you and said, "Hey, we got to get more Arizona Cardinal leads on our shows right now."
Yeah, I mean that's where it's at. I don't know. I don't want to bust on the Cardinals too. They're an interesting team. I guess they've been really good in the past, and nobody cared that much. But they're an interesting team with Cliff and Kyler and DeAndre Hopkins now and.
Yeah, no, it's a better team. It's a better team for sure. And I think there will probably, I don't know if I'd be among them, but I think there will be people this year that forecast them to finish ahead of the Rams in the NFC West. Probably they would finish third, the Rams would be fourth. I would not be among them.
Yeah.
But that's the view is the Cardinals are a team certainly trending in the right direction.
I have some Rams takes when we get there, but let's talk about the Cardinals first. And their draft class here, Isaiah Simmons at the top of it. And look, the question was still persisting into, you know, the third and fourth week of April here. Isaiah Simmons, safety or linebacker? And when I guess now that he has a home and you look at the rest of this defense, you know, you got Buda Baker, you got, I guess it'd be Jalen or Deontay Thompson at the other safety spot. You know, what are they going to do with Hassan Reddick? Where does Simmons, if he was 50-50, where does Simmons best fit in this defense?
I think the question you just asked, where is he a linebacker, is he a safety? That's the question you want your opponent asking when they take the field and line up on any given snap. I think that's what this system needs to be. Positionless player, if you want to call him that. What this system has been in the last couple years, it's honestly, I've had trouble identifying exactly what their identity is. I've watched all their snaps. I don't know what their identity is. They do a lot of zone coverage. They'll play matchup elements within the zone. They're one of the few teams that travel their corners in zone, so a corner is going to follow a receiver, even if that takes him out of his zone positioning. It needs to be adjusted, because if you're going to draft Simmons where they draft, if you're going to take Isaiah Simmons, if you have him on your team, and you have Buda Baker already there, who's very versatile, Buda Baker to me is in the Tyrann Mathieu class, then you need to be playing to those skills and those talents and building the system around them, being an attack-oriented defense, because you don't want Simmons just being a read-and-react linebacker. I don't think that's his strength, and I don't even know if that would be a strength for him. I think he's better as a space player who's in an attack mindset.
Yeah, I was kind of confused in the lead-up. And look, people who were saying these things, I presume, are smarter than me because they work for teams and whatnot. But there's a lot of, some teams are kind of down on Simmons because they want a defined role for him and they don't know what his defined role is. And it's like, I don't know, it's kind of nice to have a guy who doesn't need a defined role and can do a lot of things well.
Dime defense is becoming more popular in the league right now. And I could see Simmons being a dime safety for somebody. Now, that would not be his only role. You're not going to play him 30 snaps a game. You want him on the field for all 65, 70 snaps. So, but when you're in dime, that's your third down in situations. That's a lot of your two-minute situations. You could argue that's where the game's decided in today's NFL. They're critical snaps. I could see him being a linebacker in those scenarios. Taylor Rapp does that for the Rams. He is their dime linebacker, strong safety. To me, and I have not watched Simmons enough at all to make comparisons, but to me, his role, his style of player for what he'd be in this scheme would be similar to a Taylor Rapp, probably a more dynamic, electrifying Taylor Rapp.
Okay. Cardinals didn't have a second round pick, and then they get Josh Jones, the Houston tackle, in the third, presumably becomes the heir apparent to Marcus Gilbert there on the right side. A lot of people thought he might go first round. Bit of a developmental guy. I know a lot of people like the fact that he had some, I think it was he didn't give up a sack or something, but I always tell people it's the American Athletic Conference he plays in. He probably shouldn't be giving up a whole lot of sacks if he's an NFL caliber player. I will say another AAC team, my University of Connecticut Huskies were well represented at this draft because basically any prospect who played UConn this year, when they showed their highlights, they definitely showed a number of UConn highlights.
Well, and one other thing about the whole give up a sack, not give up a sack number thing, a lot of sacks are created not by the guy who gets beat. Not like if I'm blocking the defensive end, that doesn't necessarily mean the defensive end beat me. Someone else beats someone else in the protection, it breaks down. The way they credit who gets a sack and gives up the sack, that is in the eye of the beholder a lot of the time. So I wouldn't put any stock in any kind of stat like that, especially coming out of college where the competition, as you're alluding to, it's so different from one game to the next and one conference to the next.
Well, let's move on to the Rams. And before we get into their draft class, I just want to ask you real quick. I thought the Rams were, you know, there's a narrative about their season because, you know, you're defending NFC champs and then you miss the playoffs. I keep trying to point out to people that if Greg Zuerlein makes a 43-yarder on a Thursday night in Seattle, the Rams are in the playoffs. And obviously, if you had the expanded playoffs, the Rams would have been in the postseason last year. I don't think last year was as bad a season as people think. I realize people are sort of down on Goff, but they were... I mean, they average about 30 points per game in December, five December games. It looked like they were starting to get right a little bit. I mean, they looked really good at San Francisco on a Saturday night in Week 16. Is the offensive line getting right? Because obviously, I mean, they took a Clemson guard in the seventh round here, but they did not address the offensive line at all this offseason, aside from retaining Andrew Whitworth.
Yeah, correct. They did not. They have reason to feel good about their offensive line. It did. I think it improved a little bit over the course of last season. Not enough, of course, and the offense never really did completely get on track. It was close there at the end with San Francisco. They were playing very well down the stretch. And some of it is the Rams had some ugly losses on national TV. The Ravens embarrassed them on Monday Night Football. The Cowboys really blew their doors off on a big Sunday afternoon game. Even the Bears victory that the Rams had, it was not a Rams-style game. It was a draw, you know, slugfest, draw out the victory, slowly eke your win out there. So the offense was never as rhythmic last year as it's been the previous couple years under this coaching staff. For their offensive line, Whitworth, you feel good about him at left tackle still. Austin Corbett was, I believe, the 33rd overall pick in the draft a few years ago. Now, not every team saw him that way, but enough would that, you know, somebody took him 33rd overall. So there's some talent there, and I don't think he was bad for them once he got into the lineup. Brian Allen at center, Austin Blythe at guard, you're decent enough there, and then Bobby Evans or Rob Havenstein at right tackle. Gary, if I said to you, okay, the O-line needs to be better, which guy are you replacing? What's your answer to that question?
Yeah, I don't know if there is an answer at this point. I thought they really steadied it nicely late last season.
I would agree with that. And it'll be interesting what happens with those guys, that the rookies who played last year. David Edwards at right guard, does he get a look for maybe a starting job this year? Bobby Evans at right tackle. Evans played pretty well in some scenarios. Now, what's interesting is they had some different schemes with those guys, and they didn't run just purely the outside zone designs that we know from the Rams. There were some more north and south blocks, inside zone, where instead of stretching to the left or right, you're going up the field and you're just double teaming and running behind the double teams. So a little bit of a different game, and that's what the Rams had to do to adjust their ground game, because they just weren't the same rushing attack overall. I think there's reason for optimism, though, with this offensive line. There's probably something to be said for continuity as well, having these guys play together.
Well, so they go offensive skill position with their two second round picks. Cam Akers, the Florida State running back, who I would think when I'm looking at their two running backs, Akers and Daryl Henderson's the other young guy. I assume they haven't given up on him in any way, shape, or form. I would think Akers is kind of your inside zone power type of guy, and then Henderson is kind of your outside zone slashing type of dude. Which you know, stylistically, that obviously is nice to have. Those two backs. I guess I was caught off guard that they would, you know, go with a running back in with their first pick here.
When I saw who they took, when it was Akers, and I'm going more off what I've heard from people within the NFL on Akers versus what I've seen myself, but from people I respect and what I've heard, kind of a gliding, mature, nuanced runner is what he was known as coming out. And one of those guys where the more you watched him, the more you appreciated him. To me, Gary, that suggests I think he will fit well in their outside zone scheme. I understand the idea of Henderson and, yeah, one cut and he might take it to the house. And there's certainly something to be said for that. And that's why they drafted Henderson last year in the third round. I think Akers will fit what they're trying to do, though. Remember, even if Akers is an inside zone type of runner, they're not going to do that on first down because their whole play action game comes off that outside zone stuff. So they're going to want to keep doing that because otherwise they lose their passing game. So the game where the Bears, where they were really running a lot of inside zone, they didn't throw the ball at all that night. They didn't have the Robert Woods was out for that game. So it's if they want to be who they are, it's going to be outside zone. And I'm sure they feel that Akers can be the guy for that.
And then they go Van Jefferson, the receiver. Obviously, they lost Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks was sort of, he's down last year, had some concussion issues. But they take, and very rudely, I might add, they take Van Jefferson two picks before Van Jefferson's father's team was on the clock, the Jets. Sean Jefferson is there.
Oh, is that his son? I didn't know that was his son.
Yeah, so they snagged him 57. Jets were picking 59, ended up with Denzel Mims, which they're fine with. But again, it should be like Little League rules. You automatically go to the team that your father coaches
yeah.
on.
There you go.
Van Jefferson is... I look at this receiving core now. You know, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Van Jefferson, Josh Reynolds. And yeah, I mean, all, you know, precise route runners. I think that you like them all, but, you know, I there's no really explosive element among those four. So I guess you're going to have to generate that those explosive plays.
Yes, you will. And that will be one concern is, yeah, who takes the top off the defense? Because when they do their play action game, a lot of it is flood concepts. Flood, three level stretch, three receivers on one side of the field. One is deep, one's intermediate. That's the guy that's usually running the crossing route. And then one is shallow and underneath. And actually, the Rams will put a fourth guy over there late in the down a lot of the times. That's the foundation. And with that Niners game where they were killing San Francisco, they did that probably 25 times in that game. It was incredible. They just did it snap after snap. Who's the guy that's going deep now? Because it used to be Brandon Cooks. They don't have anyone with that kind of speed. Now, on the flip side, though, Brandon Cooks was struggling a lot against press coverage at times. So when he was not afforded a bunch of help from the scheme and the designs, when it wasn't play action, he could be taken out of some games, which is part of the reason he was available for trade. So I would assume they feel Jefferson will be better in that regard. Now, but it's you give up something. If this guy could run the way Cooks runs and still be as big as he is and not get pressed, he'd be Julio Jones. And then we're not talking about him as a second round pick.
Yep. And then the rest of day two here, they had two other picks. Terrell Lewis, the Alabama edge, who, you know, injury-prone guy, would have gone higher had it not been for some durability concerns. Presumably, you pencil him into sort of a Dante Fowler role. And then Terrell Burgess, the Utah safety, who he's converted cornerback. I don't know if he's quite rangy, athletic enough to be a single high type guy, but he did a lot of different things in Utah's defense, and they had a pretty advanced approach there. And I would assume he can help early.
I would imagine they'll have him be the single high guy, because if it's not him, who is it then? It's not Rapp, because we know he's a linebacker guy.
Aaron Donald?
Yeah. Sure, he'd be very good at that, too. I mean, John Johnson's at his best as a box guy down there. Johnson can probably play single high. He's a good all-around player, but I would imagine Burgess is here for his ability to play center field. I know the Rams, that staff likes Marcus Williams, who they liked him as a rookie when he was with the Saints. He's still in New Orleans, but Williams came out of Utah as well. It doesn't mean that Burgess will be Williams, but I would be surprised if Burgess is not the single high guy, but I don't know a lot about him. I don't study these guys until they get to the NFL.
Okay. Let's, and I should mention real quick, just because I just saw this factoid, the Rams did take a tight end, Bryson Hopkins of Purdue in round four. Did you know Tyler Higbee in the month of December, last five games of the season, Tyler Higbee led the NFL in receiving yards?
I would not have gone that far. I knew he was very productive. I didn't know that he was that productive.
Yeah, he had I had the number up and I lost it. I believe it was, if I remember correctly, 522 yards over those last five games.
And he played. It wasn't just that. Oh, he's catching the passes now. He was more athletic. He looked more athletic down the stretch. And one thing I've been watching Rams film quite a bit actually lately, Gary, is he is very good, Higbee, at releasing inside and creating space for himself off the snap. He has become a high-level route runner.
Let's go to the San Francisco 49ers. They had picked up that 13th pick for DeForest Buckner, and they end up trading down one spot with the Bucks and take Javon Kinlaw, South Carolina. We talked a little bit about it. You know, a lot of people say, like, oh, they traded Buckner for Kinlaw, and it's like, you know, they did, but, you know, they traded Buckner at $20 million for Kinlaw at a much less than that, and that's kind of how life goes at this point.
And it has to, because they had to re-sign Arik Armstead.
And then Brandon Ayuk, who we talked about, as I said, he is probably a better version of Jerry Rice that they're just adding to the offense now. I love Brandon Ayuk. He's absolutely perfect there. I said on the Friday show, if you missed, I think he's a slightly more dynamic version of Debo Samuel.
My attention, because I think Debo Samuel is a man.
I do, too. I agree with that. But the they made three day three picks, so we're not going to dive too deep into those guys. But obviously, they added Trent Williams. Joe Staley announces his retirement. They go out and get Trent Williams. Obviously, we haven't seen Williams in a while now, but you would think that this is a pretty good trade-off for them, and we'll see how Trent Williams ages into his 30s here. But at least in the short term, they've solidified that spot.
And when we last saw Trent Williams, he was the most outstanding, even explosive blocker out in space on their perimeter, probably in the NFL. He is really good in the screen game. He's really good at what they call running the alley, getting down kind of by the painted field numbers and clearing out space there. And when you consider all the misdirection that they do, all the stretch zone, all the end arounds to Samuel and some of the screens that they'll throw in San Francisco, having a guy like Trent Williams that can do that and get to the perimeter, you could almost argue that guy's a weapon now. I mean, I think he'll fit really well for what they do. And Shanahan obviously knows him very well because there's the Washington background overall there. That was a really good trade. And a good commentary on the Niners organization that Joe Staley went along with this and didn't break the news to anybody till after the trade, which I don't know if that's how it went, but reading the tea leaves, that's probably how it went. Staley did right by the organization on that, and you know he would probably only do that if the organization had been doing right by him for a long time.
Yeah, and I should mention, respected private citizen Peter King, in his Monday column, he was embedded with the Bucs. And we talked a little bit on Friday, you know, oh, why would the Bucs come up one spot? You know, was someone else bidding for that 49ers pick, and that's why they had to pay for it, that sort of thing. Jason Light told Peter that he had heard rumblings that Joe Staley was retiring, so they thought the 49ers might be in the running for Tristan Wirfs, who was the last sort of, you know, of the big four tackles on the board in this draft, and that's why the Bucs felt even more urgency to jump up to 13. So,
yep, we wondered about that. What did they say to the Bucs on the phone that made them make that trade? Because the Niners, to us, we didn't know the Joe Staley thing. It didn't look, and John Lynch had actually said the opposite. Joe Staley will be back here. That was a smokescreen. So we were wondering how that conversation happened. I don't know who told Jason like that. I would guess it'd be an agent if I had to guess, but that's total guesswork.
That's where a lot of the information comes from. The Seattle Seahawks. So the Seahawks, they take Jordan Brooks, the Texas Tech linebacker, and during the lead up to the draft, we heard more and more teams really like Jordan Brooks. I know, you know, obviously you have Bobby Wagner, you have KJ Wright. Those guys are getting up there, and Brooks, at the very least, becomes an option for the future. But, I mean, they play a lot of three linebackers in Seattle.
They do, and I'm wondering, it's one of two things. Why are you taking Brooks? Because remember last year they drafted Cody Barton in the third round, and they Pete Carroll said Cody Barton's their best coverage linebacker already, or at least they feel he can become that.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I know, I hear you, but here's the point. We can agree on this. They feel good about his coverage skills.
Yes,
he's not as good as Wright, I would imagine, and Wagner, who I think is a little overrated in coverage, but he's an excellent player and a Hall of Fame guy. So, Cody Barton's in the mix. He's going to play for them. So now they've got four linebackers that they're planning to play in the next couple years. Is Brooks here because he's replacing KJ Wright, which is quite possible? Wright's in a contract year, I believe. Is he replacing Bobby Wagner as well, since Barton's here to theoretically replace Wright? Are we seeing a total change of the guard over the next 2 years? Or are the Seahawks going to stay committed to this 4-3 approach? He's keeping three linebackers on the field, not playing with a slot nickel corner. Is that going to become the standard for them? Because they really did not address that position in free agency at all this year. I think the best slot guy on the field for them would probably be Quandre Diggs, and that's not how they use him. He's a free safety. So I wonder if they're going to stick with this 4-3 thing.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I was... Again, we talked a lot how there was sort of a lack of edge rushers, and they did take Daryl Taylor in the second round. I thought he was very good out of Tennessee, really an edge burner. So maybe they addressed it there. Maybe they just didn't like anyone at the end of the first round. Of course, they trade out of the first round every year, so if you didn't like anyone, you figured that's what they would have ended up doing. But they do add Daryl Taylor in round two, but that's kind of all they've done. Is Jadeveon Clowney going to be back? And that might be a function of, is anyone else going to sort of take the risk on Clowney when your doctors can't sort of put your hands on him? Maybe that changes this summer. But, I mean, look, I don't want to further enrage Seahawks fans, because I said this all last season. This defense got a lot of takeaways. Those takeaways were, I mean, they had a lot of fumble recoveries. I mean, it just, and it's not a front four you would have looked at and said, like, well, this is really disruptive. I can see why they were getting so many strip sacks and fumble recoveries and stuff like that. I think they were just sort of, you know, they got them in clusters when maybe they shouldn't have been coming in clusters. Yeah. So, again, this is a team, they finished them like +8 in point differential. They had a lot of opponents miss field goals over the course of the year. I was hoping they'd be a little bit more aggressive and sort of rebuilding this defense this offseason, and they weren't. And, I mean, look, they win every year, so I probably shouldn't criticize them, but...
Where I thought they'd be 7-9 last year, and what I think they finished 11-5. Was that their final? I mean, this is a really, really well run organization, top to bottom.
They end up going with Damian Lewis, the guard from LSU, really a fire hydrant type of dude, pure power guy at guard, and yeah, well, you know, we'll see what they do.
He's gonna play. He'll play for him now because they got rid of DJ Fluker. Yep. Phil Haynes, a fourth-round pick a year ago. I don't know anything. You know, he was not on the field last year. I don't know a lot about him. But that's kind of the kind of lineman they've been getting. It's these bigger north and south guys. Seahawks used to be an outside zone running team back when Marshawn Lynch was here. Even though Lynch never stretched the zone, he always kept it front side and just cut it up inside. But the blocking structure was outside zone. They're not that kind of blocking team necessarily anymore. It's more of a power, man-to-man, downhill, north and south kind of running game.
Yeah, they moved on from Justin Britt as well. They're changing things up on the offensive line again. And before we move on, I do just want to mention the number was 16 fumble takeaways last year, which I just don't think is sustainable with what they have. I mean, that was tied for second. The Steelers were ahead of them with 18. The Bucs also had 16. You look at the Steelers and the Bucs; those are very disruptive pass rushes, especially coming off the edge. And you just don't have that in Seattle. I don't know if they can count on another 16 fumble takeaways next season. That's something we talked about with the 49ers in the reverse last year. You know, 2018, they had 7 takeaways, and then they ramped up that pass rush, and it just took off, and that was the big difference last year. But enough of the 2019 recap. Let's move on to the AFC South. The Atlanta Falcons, kind of just a straightforward draft. I mean, they had 3 picks in the top 100, and they kind of addressed what I think people would have seen as needs with this team. They take AJ Terrell, the long cornerback from Clemson, in round 1.
And stylistically, he fits. We know that whole Seahawks corner thing that we've heard about with Dan Quinn, and there's probably something to that. Isaiah Oliver, who will probably be their number 3 corner now, because I think they like Kendall Sheffield quite a bit, their 4th-round pick a year ago. But Isaiah Oliver is another long-bodied guy, so they're drafting similar types of corners in recent years. Are you reading the next guy? Are you going down the list and I'm talking about each guy? Is that how we're doing this team?
Sure, let's do it that way. Marlon Davidson, defensive end, but really more of a guy. I think you reduce him inside on passing downs. He's an Auburn guy, played with Derrick Brown. Really, really good. I really like him. But, we talked a lot about the need for sort of an edge burner here. They did add Dante Fowler, so you do have an edge guy. So maybe they just sort of went best defensive lineman available at pick 47.
Yeah, that's possible. That's what they did. They must like Tack McKinley as a D-end more than I like him as a D-end. I mean, they don't love him because I don't think they picked up his 5th-year option. So he's in this pick of Davidson could suggest that McKinley's on his way out. My point, though, is I've thought for a little while now, why not slide McKinley inside a D-tackle? I think he's got the body type for that. They apparently don't see it that way because who else will play DN for him? It's going to be Fowler and then who? Davidson, if you're saying he's a D-tackle, and I think that makes sense, McKinley becomes the other nickel pass-rushing defensive end then.
And then the center, Matt Hennessy, another good mover out of Temple. And we've talked about it. Alex Mack is probably nearing the end here. So now you got his heir apparent there.
Yeah, that's just drafting 101. That's as straightforward as it looks right there.
All right. Nice.
This team, by the way, Gary, I think they're in win now mode.
No, I think so too, and we've talked about it a lot. They really rectified what was going wrong defensively. We've mentioned a couple times they finished 6-2 down the stretch. I think a lot of people saw them as sort of in the Super Bowl conversation coming into this year. I mean, they were just at the Super Bowl a couple years ago. I can't quite remember what happened in that game, but that's a team that should be going for it right now. You still have Matt Ryan, you still have Julio Jones. The window, if it's not open, it's open. It's as open as it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's open. Matt Ryan, somebody asked me this weekend if maybe they would move on from Matt Ryan. I don't think they see him like that. He's, he'll be 35 in May. It's a little older than I thought he was. But I don't think that's how they see him. I think they believe he's still an elite quarterback.
Let's go Carolina Panthers. We've been wondering what they're going to roll out this year. A lot of college coaches coming up to the NFL here. They take all defense. 7 picks, 7 defensive players. Derrick Brown and Yetur Grosmatos were their first two. Brown, obviously, interior lineman. Grosmatos, an edge guy who I think you're going to ask to do a lot of sort of looping inside and tackle end games here.
And Kawan Short's already in the mix there. Still an elite defensive tackle. They signed Steven Weatherly. He'll probably play on base downs. Maybe play some defensive tackle in nickel situations. Be interesting to see if Brown can be a full-time nickel D tackle. We know he can play first and second down. It'd be hard to justify taking him as high in the draft as they did if you didn't feel he could play nickel defensive tackle, but Weatherly can be in the mix. And then remember last year, Brian Burns, they took in the first round. So their front four is pretty defined. I think it's going to be a 4-3 scheme, straightforward zone coverage, if I had to guess. That's what they've been mostly the last few years now. It's defined what they're doing on defense, at least, which it should be. They just added a bunch of players.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeremy Chin from Southern Illinois, sort of a safety linebacker hybrid type guy. I would assume they'd play him at safety, kind of the Eric Reed role there. And then yep. I will mention Tony Pride, the cornerback from Notre Dame, really fast guy, because they are incredibly thin at cornerback. You look at that cornerback group. I don't know who starts opposite Dante Jackson right now, and I don't know how crazy they are about Dante Jackson, who was a little bit up and down last season.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess I had noticed that, but it had not been at the front of my mind. They have Corn Elder might be in the mix at cornerback for them. You know, Corn Elder, it's a fun name. He's been around. He's been on some rosters. He's been with this team for a while. That's a position that will need help, though. Those safeties that you just mentioned, they're going to be playing back quite a bit here.
Yeah. Yep. Let's go on to the Saints. Short one here. They did at one point trade all their day three picks to jump up and get another day two pick. They did end up jumping back into the seventh round to take the quarterback, Tommy Stevens, another sort of athletic developmental guy. But they end up going with Cesar Ruiz, who that sort of caught us off guard. And best we can figure is he is going to replace Larry Warford very soon.
And how soon is the question? Warford, to me, did not look like he was in decline last year, but the Saints know a lot more about him than I do. His contract is up this year, so even if he was not in decline, you still have to make a decision on him. That's why Ruiz is here. These other picks, too, that you're going to list off here, these third-rounders, I don't see an immediate role for them either. I see how they fit the system and the program. I don't know where their snaps and their reps will come from in year one here.
Yeah, Zach Bond, you would think his value is probably going to play on third downs and just get after the quarterback, speed guy.
He's not a real pure speed edge bender type guy, as far as I understand.
He's fast. I'll say that. He's small. He is fast for a. I don't know what he weighed at the combine. I would have said somewhere in the 230 range. But
yeah.
So I mean, there you go. I think he's a guy who you just send straight at the quarterback. And you develop him as someone who can play off the ball a little bit as well. And then Adam Trautman, who I presume Adam Trautman is just straight up, he'll replace Jared Cook after the season or two seasons down the road if they bring back Cook for one more.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And Trautman might be a guy who needs that kind of development as well. The good teams, when you're in one of the benefits of having a complete roster and hitting on draft picks, you're able to take a lot more chances and freedoms with what you would do in the following drafts because you're not needing guys to play right away. A guy like Trautman, you can develop within your system. He doesn't need to be on the field very often. We talked about that's how Seattle does things. That's sustained success in the NFL. And I think the Saints are kind of near that territory now. They've been a playoff caliber team for several years in a row now.
The Bucs, as we mentioned, they end up jumping up one spot in the first round, take Tristan Wirfs, which we talked about quite a bit on the Friday show, and how that sort of signifies that maybe this is a little bit more of a Bruce Arians offense with some of the downfield stuff as opposed to Tom Brady-ish quick strike stuff. But day two, they end up getting Antoine Winfield Jr., another safety there, and they take the running back, Keyshawn Vaughn, and you kind of wonder, it seems like Arians has been less than thrilled with Ronald Jones, so you wonder if Keyshawn Vaughn is going to be the guy who ends up being sort of the workhorse back in this offense.
Yeah, because they've sure talked Ronald Jones up a lot. We hear a lot of positive headlines about how the Bucs feel about Ronald Jones, and you know, you don't get those from Christian McCaffrey's team a whole lot because you don't need them. So it's, and then to take a guy in the third round at his position, you might be onto something there.
Yeah.
You know, Jones has some nice skills, though. I could see why Jones got drafted where he did. There's a lot to like. And they took a guy at his position. Coaches and teams, they tell you how they feel about guys by what their actions are.
And Winfield is nice in a Todd Bowles defense here.
Yes, because I think Winfield, let's assume Winfield can play. Let's say nobody's a safe pick, but let's say they are very confident that he'll be on the field for them. That solves a lot of problems because their secondary last year, Jamel Dean at corner, third round pick, got better over the course of the year. Carlton Davis, 2018 second rounder. Sean Murphy Bunting, he's actually a pretty good looking player, but he moved around a little. Is he a slot guy? Is he an outside guy? MJ Stewart, these are all young corners, and I think they're good, not great, and they achieve that a good, not great through highs and lows. Safety's a little bit true as well. Mike Edwards, third-round pick last year, and this is where it applies more to Antoine Winfield. Justin Evans, rangy guy, but didn't play last year due to injury. We're talking talent here. None of it is proven. Other than Carlton Davis, none of these guys are totally proven three down players. If you can get that out of Winfield, that's a lot more freedom and flexibility you have with deploying these other guys, because now you're only filling one spot. You're not trying to fill both spots out there at safety. So I like the Winfield pick because I think there's a potential domino effect with it.
Let's go to the NFC North, starting with Chicago Bears. They came into draft weekend with only 9 tight ends on the roster, so they had to address that shortage, and they get Cole Kmet with the 43rd pick. They have a lot of tight ends. Obviously, they're not all I'm sure they're all perfectly nice guys, but they're not all necessarily great players. They signed Jimmy Graham, and they paid Jimmy Graham, I think, a little bit more than everyone expected Jimmy Graham to get. But now you have Cole Kmet. They brought in Demetrius Harris. Adam Shaheen is still there, but I would assume some mix of Graham, Kmet, and Harris are what you're looking at here.
Yeah, and I would imagine that Shaheen's going to have a tough time making this roster because those three guys you mentioned, Graham is clearly a receiver. Harris is, he can do everything. I think he's a little more, he's here because he's a good receiver off the bench. Kmet's an all-around classic tight end. They need a blocking tight end somewhere. And Shaheen has not been on the field at times. Ben Broniker got on the field ahead of him last year. So did J.P. Holtz. But we don't need to get into great depth on the number 4 tight end of a 7-9 team from the NFC North from a year ago. I guess what this tells me, though, with what they're doing and the position they've invested in, they want to do what the Chiefs do, which is an obvious passing situation, third down and long, second and long even, especially third down, though. It's 3-by-1, or it's a 1-by-3. When you say 1-by-3, you mean a tight end as the 1 and 3 receivers on the other side. A 3-by-1, the tight end would be part of the 3 receiver side. So anyway, it's a 1-by-3 formation. Travis Kelce is a huge piece of that for Kansas City. They know that they don't have a Kelce on the roster, but you want a guy who can be a receiving threat so you can at least scheme the way you might with Kelce. And that's Matt Nagy comes from KC. He knows the value of that kind of thing. They signed Trey Burton for that, and they lined up with Burton that way a lot. It didn't work out for a number of reasons. They're trying again with Graham. They'll probably try it with Cole Kmet. They'll probably have these guys all on the field at the same time as well. Not necessarily in third down, but when you go with multi-tight ends, you can simplify some of the coverages and looks. And if they're going to salvage Mitchell Trubisky, and that's a big if because Nick Foles is here now, but if they're going to salvage Trubisky, you want to help him as much as you can. You want to put him in a chance to succeed, give him some predictable looks, and let him find his rhythm and feet as a passer.
I think Nick Foles is going to be the quarterback there.
I kind of agree with you because what Foles gives you that we have not yet seen from Trubisky, maybe we'll see it. He's still relatively young. He didn't play a lot in college. So he's basically where most second-year QBs would be right now. He's entering year two in terms of total reps at a high level. But they're not running the full offense with them. It looks like they are because they do a lot of stuff before the snap and it's well presented in their formations. Their route combinations and what they're doing, they're not close to doing what the Chiefs do, for example, and nobody is, but they're not running an expansive offense with Trubisky. With Foles, they'll at least run almost the full offense.
Yeah, it's like I said, a lot of tight ends. You got Tariq Cohen, not a whole lot of depth at receiver. Allen Robinson, Anthony Miller. After that, you're looking at Cordero Patterson, Javon Wims, Riley Ridley types, and then they couldn't get anything going on the ground last year. And I don't know if David Montgomery plays faster in his second year. They did not address the offensive line outside of losing Kyle Long. So just still a lot of question marks here on offense, but they have a chance to do some creative problem solving here with Matt Nagy. Should mention they did have a second round pick, and then they didn't have another pick until outside the 150. But they do take Jalen Johnson, the Utah cornerback, who seems to be good value at where they got him.
Need to have a man-to-man corner. Chuck Pagano wants to blitz. You play man-to-man behind most blitzes. If he's not blitzing, he's usually playing some kind of cover 4 or quarters coverage. And for cornerbacks, for all intents and purposes, that's man-to-man as well.
The Lions, we talked about Jeff Okuda. We know why they took him, because you need to cover people in the NFL. Round two, they go DeAndre Swift, the Georgia running back, who can do a lot of things. And, I don't know if you want to call him, stylistically a James White type, Alvin Kamara type, but he's that type of guy who adds a dimension to the passing game. Kerryon Johnson is capable in the passing game, but I think Swift is more definitely a movable chess piece type of guy, definitely a guy who is, well, frankly, more of a threat in the passing game.
And what I like is they drafted Jonah Jackson at guard in the third round. They got Logan Stenberg, the Kentucky guy, in the fourth round as well. So whenever your picks can buttress other picks, I really like that. And they've invested in the running game now in three ways. A couple of guards, which they could use an infusion of talent at that position. And then what you just outlined in Swift. And the other guy, maybe you were going to get to him, Gary, but I'm going to steal your spot here. Julian Okwara, as a pass rusher. They badly, badly needed pass rushing help in Detroit. And Romeo Okwara is already on the roster. Julian and Romeo, from what I've read about Julian and looked into a little bit, very different types of players. Romeo's kind of more that classic Devon Kennard kind of guy. He's going to hold the block, hold the edge. And Julian's more of a bender and a more explosive athlete, which probably explains why Julian went in the third round and Romeo, I'm clicking on to see, went undrafted. Romeo made the NFL in 2016, though he's had a nice career.
Yeah, they've cornered the market on the Okwaras. We'll see what they do. It's funny. I'm plugging this, but I'm not proud that I'm plugging this. So we have the first MMQB Power Poll coming up today. It was me and Jenny Vrentis and Connor Orr and Albert Breer and Mitch Goldich voted. And I just noticed a lot of people had Detroit like 31-32. And I have been very critical of what the Lions have done. I mean, they've invested so much in an offensive line that just hasn't really done anything. And I think they've sort of squandered Matthew Stafford to an extent. But before Stafford got hurt last year, I mean, this was they were what? They were sitting at what, like 3-3-1. They got robbed by the officials in Green Bay on a Monday night. That one tie, they were an ill-fated timeout away from doing. But Stafford was playing at an MVP level. Obviously the defense sort of fell apart, and you can't really keep pace when it's Jeff Driscoll or David Blau under center for you. But I'm not going to sit here like I did 2 years ago and guarantee a Detroit Lions dynasty, but there's no reason the Lions can't be a 9-7 team if Matthew Stafford is going to be in the line. If Stafford's hurt again, I mean, they'll be the worst team in football.
I agree with you. They got to learn to finish games, and it's easy to say. I don't know how you actually go about finishing games other than playing better. That pass rush show was a big factor in the inability to finish, because what would happen is as the game went along, their pass defense just got worse and worse a lot of the times last year. And that wasn't necessarily on the secondary. It was more on the guys trying to get to the QB. So, and they're, you know, they follow the Patriot model. They don't necessarily need big time pass rushers, but you need some guys that can at least win when they get into one-on-one scenarios or execute the schemed rushes. A lot of stunts, a lot of twists. Jamie Collins will be part of the pass rush now. Trey Flowers needs to be better than he was a year ago. I didn't think he was a very high-impact player for what they're asking of him. Mm-hmm. And now Julian Okwara. So three guys that give you a chance at maybe being a little bit different defensively now.
Okay, so here we go on the Green Bay Packers. We talked about Jordan Love a lot on Friday night. I'm sure we're about to talk about him a little bit more because you just look at the draft class as a whole and kind of wonder. But before we really dive into this, I do want to throw out a trivia question, and you can maybe think about it. It's a number guess, so it's not a big deal. But
are you asking me or the listeners here?
Both. I'm asking you, but the listeners are you. It's like a.
Oh, we have a better audience than that. Come on.
It's like a choose your own adventure type thing. What should Andy answer? I'm stealing this off of Cole Kubelik's Twitter feed. So if you know the answer, and I assume, like most people, you listen to this podcast with an audience, like a bunch of people get together. That's how you're supposed to be experiencing it. It's sort of a you want to be within a crowd.
Especially now, this time in our world.
That's socially distanced, but I mean, you can't just listen to this alone. You're missing out on all the fun. This is the trivia question. How many first round picks has Aaron Rodgers thrown touchdown passes to in his career? Like how many different ones? and you can think about it, and then you can answer at the end of this section here. But so Jordan Love, and we're not quite sure what Jordan Love means here. I mean, they, I don't know. I have not gained any clarity. He's certainly an inexpensive backup, I guess. And then, I don't know, if you put him on the field, maybe you end up in a situation where someone will give you a high draft pick for Jordan Love down the road. But also you just spent a high draft pick on Jordan Love. But round two, they go A.J. Dillon. They go with the big back. I mean, I would say in a perfect world, A.J. Dillon becomes your Derrick Henry. I don't know. Is that what you want to build now with Aaron Rodgers there and do a bunch of, you know, sort of wide zone and then play action off of that?
That's what Matt LaFleur. That's the answer to that is yes. That's what Matt LaFleur wants to build because that's what he had in Tennessee with Derrick Henry. And I know he's not in Tennessee anymore, but they've continued to run that system since he's been gone. That's what Matt LaFleur knows, and it's worked really well. It's what Shanahan runs. It's what McVay runs. So the last couple of Super Bowls have been represented by that scheme. Tennessee Titans were a game away from the Super Bowl. Green Bay attempted to be that kind of team last year, and I think they got pretty close, or not where they want to be yet. These outside zone teams are the most successful offenses in the NFL right now. So LaFleur's thinking is that's what we're going to build. It's going to start from the run game.
And Josiah DeGuara, he's an H-back. He's not ever going to be a Y tight end in the league out of Cincinnati, a smaller tight end type guy. Did you ask me about him before the draft? There was someone to reach out
I want to say, I think we talked about him. Well, we wouldn't have talked about him the other night because we recorded that right after the first round. But I feel like we have asked about him at some point. If he's on the field, he's going to be your second tight end, correct? He's not a wide tight end. So that's even more evidence. There's a lot of evidence here, Gary, that these guys want to be a run type of team. They drafted Dillon. They drafted DeGuara. They've invested in that kind of scheme. You could even argue that drafting Love is a little bit of a commitment towards that because Love is stylistically in what he can be, if it all goes well, he'll be a more on-schedule player than Rodgers. It doesn't mean he's going to be better than Rodgers. No one's saying that. Maybe he will be. You know, they might think he could be one day. But stylistically, he's more of a rhythmic QB. Rodgers, that's not in his innate nature. So Green Bay has known this, and that was the biggest challenge they had last year. And I thought they did a pretty good job, a really good job of massaging that and having Rodgers come back to them, and then they meet Rodgers in the middle, and it kind of goes that way. But they're making a commitment to the run game for sure, which means to some degree, they're asking Rodgers to come a little more towards the middle, towards them.
Okay. When someone did ask me about DeGuara, my scouting report was he'll make you forget all about Clay Harbor. But
that's what I needed to not talk so long because that's a good joke. That's funny. I'm sorry. That was a good one to tee up faster. I Aaron Rodgers'd you on that. Actually, I kind of went into my own rhythm and schedule there. I like to think I still made the play, but it was a little frustrating.
I only have so much Clay Harbor related material that I can go through here.
Are we answering this Rodgers trivia thing before we move on to the next team?
So you got to, if you, when whoever's home right now, when you're listening to this, please shout out your answers and then like Price is Right. And then Andy will listen to the audience and then give his answer. All right.
Okay.
Give your answer.
I want to say one guy. It's one is the answer. It's a number answer.
Do you know who it is? Did you look it up?
No, I promise you I did not look it up. And I thought about this guy, and I almost clicked to confirm it. But I thought, I'm confident enough that I'm going to answer it anyway without looking it up. I think it's Mercedes Lewis.
Wow. Did you really not look it up?
I did not look it up. He was like a late first-round pick for Jacksonville
a long time ago. I mean, that was a lifetime ago. You and I were not alive when Mercedes Lewis was drafted into the league. So,
and I would almost argue you could – I mean, is that even count? He wasn't their first-round pick. He's at the back end of his career. They got him on like the 16th hole of his outing here.
Yeah.
So that is the answer, though.
That is impressive. I still think you looked it up. I promise you, I did not.
I have always answered these with integrity. And if I by that, I mean when I do look it up, I admit it. I have not looked it up this time.
Okay. I mean, I hinted that it was a small number, so I wouldn't surprise that you answered one. I was just really surprised.
The fact that we're asking it that we're asking it, it's a small number. Rodgers has been around for 10 years. What do you, I mean, it's, of course it's a small number.
23.
More than 10 years.
23
much
would
more
be
than,
a lot.
Yeah, 15 years for Rodgers. Why would I say 10?
I don't know.
He didn't play for three. That's why. I mean, it's in the middle. It's in the middle. He was around for 12.
You are off right now because we are on what? This is team 26 of this weekend of Draft Mania. But let's go to we're arriving at the Minnesota Vikings. So now we have a full hour to devote to the Vikings' 78-man draft class here. 15 players for the Vikings. We talked about Justin Jefferson and Jeff Gladney. We still sort of wonder how Jefferson and Thielen, what you do with them lining up. Jefferson presumably is going to play outside, which he didn't do in college. Right? Presumably?
Yeah, because there's not a slot receiver in their lineup. They're not going to put three receivers on the field very often. They will play with base personnel a lot of the time. Now, as we talked about the other night, though, with the nature of their offense, I think stylistically Jefferson will do more things that he did at LSU than you would guess, stylistically. By the way, how many LSU guys have become Minnesota Vikings, like actually big-time players? Because Justin Jefferson will have worn nothing but purple and yellow and white in his football. Where did he go to high school? He's going to be in the same color of uniform for his entire life.
Did you know he was a zero-star recruit at LSU?
I did not know that. I didn't even know there was such thing. I was a zero-star recruit at a lot of places.
I guess we all were. He was almost a podcast host, but instead he went to LSU and became a 111-catch national champion and now a first-round NFL pick.
Yeah.
They take Jeff Gladney, who, they need plenty of cornerbacks. They lost three of their first four cornerbacks from last season, so Jeff Gladney is going to take one of those spots. They also took Cameron Dantzler. I think Dantzler was maybe a first-round dark horse type of guy until the combine. He just didn't run well. I hate to emphasize the combine that much, but I do think when it comes to cornerbacks, I think those combine measurables, because it's such a purely athletic, reactionary position, not fully, you still need, you know, a fairly high football IQ and all that, but I think it's easy to sort of bump guys up or down based on what they run, and Dantzler did run some of the 4.6s at the combine, but he is a big corner.
Speed is one thing that can be hard to play without at cornerback in the NFL. That we could debate. I think speed, I don't want to say it's overrated. The 40 time is certainly overrated. That, to me, the 40 time means almost nothing. So, but let's say this dance. Did you see Dantzler at all in college? Does he play fast at all?
I would not. He doesn't. But I also wouldn't have guessed he would have run as slowly as he did. I mean, I would have called him probably an average speed guy with good length.
The speed's a hard one. I wish I could give this guy credit because it was a really good tweet. Somebody had an image the other day, and if you know who it was, tweet us or send us an email at TalkBack, because it was an image of all the guys that have run slow 40 times in the draft and the names of the corners, and you wouldn't recognize hardly any. Josh Norman was the only name I recognized on first blush, I think. There aren't a lot of slow corners in the NFL is the point.
And they take Ezra Cleveland, which maybe spells the end of Riley Reiff coming up.
Possibly. By the way, Justin Jefferson, to clean that up, when he went to Destrehan High School in Louisiana, they were red and white, kind of. They almost looked like Washington
maroon-ish
State uniforms. Yeah. So anyway, unfortunately, it's not. It can be all purple and yellow. But Cleveland, Riley Reiff, is he on the outs? Probably. Next year, you can get rid of him for minimal cap damage, if I recall. One thing you might want to keep in mind, this has actually floated to me. I was on the Boise radio show today. I did a bunch of radio stuff. Boise, by coincidence, was one of them. So my buddies down at KTIK pointed out maybe Riley Reiff plays guard for him. And left guard was a position of need this year. I think Pat Elflein's had a lot of chances. I don't know if he's cashed in on him well enough. So could you kick Reiff? I assume it'd be Reiff you'd move inside, because the guy who's been there a while and the guy who probably won't be there much longer, you would be more willing to tinker with his position than Cleveland's, I would guess. But that, you know, I could be wrong on that. They'll figure it out. Cleveland gives them more talent along the offensive line. We know that. And he does fit an outside zone scheme. He's a better zone blocker than man-to-man blocker.
And look, they had a ton of day three picks here. They at one point were scheduled for 13. They traded a couple. They ended up making, looks like, 11 day three picks. And they need bodies in there. And they're going to have competitions. And you know, for their sake, they're going to try and shake out some of these guys. I'm sorry, we are not going to run through all of them.
What surprises me with all of this, Gary, is the discussion around Minnesota and the Kirk Cousins re-signing the contract kind of has propagated the discussion, is that, well, now's the time. Our window is now. It looks to me like your window was last year. This is a lot of new personnel that they're incorporating, especially when you factor in who's going to be coming off the bench for them. This team is not nearly as good on paper as it was a year ago.
It's a lot of new personnel, and I mean, look, we're probably going to talk all summer about how, you know, the lack of mini camps and all the virtual stuff is going to make it more difficult for new guys to be broken in, and continuity is going to be an advantage for a lot of these teams. So, yep. Look, they were in a lot of trouble cap-wise. I mean, I guess that necessitated the Cousins restructuring to an extent. Someone pointed out to me after I had floated, will the Vikings take Jordan Love and trade back in my mock draft for the people, which is not supposed to be read by anyone, let alone followed at all. But Cousins' 2022 contract becomes fully guaranteed, if I have this correctly, and I might be butchering it, comes fully guaranteed on like the fifth day of the 2021 league year. So basically they're locked in to Kirk Cousins through 2022 on expensive contracts.
And I'm looking at now, I know this, they can't cut him now because that would trigger $62 million in dead cap money. So he'll be here for the duration of this season. How's that for analysis?
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins, look, it was in his interest to sign this deal as well, because there were, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't blame him. I was just, you know, it was kind of head-scratching that they were making the sort of three-year commit. I really thought the Vikings at some point were going to kind of say, Cousins thing is going well, but look at how much we're having to tear down. Maybe we want one of those rookie, quarterback contracts here, and we'll roll the dice. We don't necessarily need a guy at the top of the first round, that sort of thing, but... Yeah,
I wonder if they would have done that if they had any clue at all. Maybe they had a clue, but if they knew that Green Bay was going after Jordan Love, would that have changed their approach? They could have had Love before the Packers got him.
I guess, but it's the same problem. I mean, they are locked in. They are locked into Cousins through 2022.
Well, I guess I'm thinking before they locked themselves into Cousins, if they had.
Oh, correct.
Decided,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got you. I got you. I read you. One more division, and then we're done. Dallas Cowboys, NFC East. The Dallas Cowboys have won the draft. They will hold a parade as soon as they can, and that's it. I mean, we talked about CeeDee Lamb a little bit on Friday, and how Lamb really allows Amari Cooper to play in the slot a lot, which is really where you want him. But they end up getting Trayvon Diggs, who, I mean, look. Maybe a little bit raw, but I don't know if Diggs necessarily has to play a huge role as a rookie. And I mean, my goodness, he's a converted receiver, and the physical traits are. I mean, this is a cornerback built in the lab type of thing.
Yeah, long arm, physical guy, probably doesn't have to play right away. Although I would think they would want that. Because if he's not, then who's your number? I mean, it's either Anthony Brown playing outside, probably be Jordan Lewis outside, and Anthony Brown would stay in the slot in that case.
Which I think is serviceable.
Yeah, that's probably fine. I like Lewis as a really good number four corner, and in a way where I want him on the field at times. I don't want him just being on the bench, and we feel good that he's on the bench, and he might come in if we need him. I think he deserves to be on the field. He's a good player. I liked him in the role he's been in as a number four corner who can do a lot of different things for you. Play all the corner spots.
And they end up with their other day two pick. They take a Neville Gallimore, penetrating interior defensive lineman. What's Mike Nolan going to do up front here with this unit?
Well, last time we saw Mike Nolan calling plays in the NFL, I believe he was with the Falcons as their defensive coordinator, and they made a conscious effort under him to be a blitzing defense. They even had meetings about it with the front office and said, we feel we can manufacture our pass rush. So let's not go. We don't need to get a, they didn't say it back then, but we don't need to get a DeMarcus Lawrence type of guy. We don't need these super expensive premium pass rushers. We need corners who can do that because we'll manufacture the pass rush. Just give us the coverage on the back end that makes us feel comfortable being aggressive. That was his approach when we last saw him. Now, maybe he's shifted his philosophy a little bit. They did sign Don Terry Poe. Mm-hmm. They signed Gerald McCoy. You just described Gallimore as a one-gap penetrator type of guy. Those players fit a 4-3 zone-based scheme. So maybe they're wanting to stick with that. That's what they had under Rod Marinelli and Chris Richard this past year. Quite frankly, they didn't play that scheme very well this past year. It has not worked. It should work out for them because they had a lot of talent on defense, but it did not work out for them. They weren't good enough in it. So I would think Nolan's going to do more of the blitzing and be a little bit more multiple than what we've seen, but we don't know that for sure.
Yeah, he's they just didn't tackle well last year, and maybe getting Leighton Vander Esch back in the lineup rectifies some of that. The Giants, we talked about it, they chose Andrew Thomas. They liked Andrew Thomas best. There's nothing wrong with that. They'll be right or they'll be wrong, but Andrew Thomas will be their right tackle. Xavier McKinney was their early second round pick here. A lot of people thought McKinney was going round one. Versatile safety. You can play over the slot a little bit, and I think if you're going to play him over the slot, it's more of a zone look type of thing, but very good at undercutting routes.
There you go. And they whatever it is, they could use that kind of piece overall. They could use a third safety if they want. Remember, it's Patrick Graham as their coordinator now. He's not a pure Patriot guy. He's had some other exposure to other schemes, but my guess is Joe Judge hired him because he's more Patriot than not Patriot on defense. Patrick Chung's an enormous player for New England in terms of establishing the style of play that franchise prefers. Do you maybe view Xavier McKinney in that kind of light, the do-everything type of box safety slash corner? Chung, I see as kind of a slot corner at times. They'll have options there. And it might change week to week, too. That's another Patriot trademark.
And we wondered if they'd address offensive line again. Thomas will start on the right side this year. Does he move to the left side? What do they do? But they probably need another tackle long-term. I don't know if Nate Solder stays there, but they do. Dave Gettleman goes back to the old proven formula of taking the best UConn offensive tackle available. Last time the Giants did that, of course, it led to two Super Bowl championships when they took Will Beatty in the second round back in 2009. So
I forgot about Will Beatty. That's a guy that just – he was a nice player when he was at his height. Yeah,
he was. And Matt Parrott is kind of a late comer to football, but a really good prospect. And again, as a UConn supporter, not a very passionate one, but as a UConn supporter, it was nice to see some UConn highlights that were not them getting. There's one of AJ Dillon, the running back from BC, the Packers took, and there were like eight UConn guys trying to tackle him at like the 15-yard line, and he just carried them all into the end zone. And like that was the UConn draft weekend. That and Matt Parrott.
I have a quick Will Beatty story for you.
Ooh, yeah.
It comes out of 2017. I want to make sure I get the timing right on this. Our old friend, Matt Gagne, the Eagles signed Will Beatty. Matt Gagne is our editor at the MMQB. He was there from the beginning of it. He was one of the original guys.
Yep.
The Eagles signed Will Beatty. I guess I'm going back. It looks like it's November of 2017. And when they signed him, so that's mid-season. Will Beatty had been out of the NFL. He was 32 years old at that point. Matt Gagne contacted me wanting to know if I was wanting to, do you want to write up the Will Beatty thing, the big breaking news on Will Beatty? They signed a left tackle. And I said, what do you mean? What breaking news? Like, and he goes, well, they got Will Beatty, the Giants tackle. I said, we're in the middle of November. He hasn't been in the league. He's a retread guy. I mean, he's had a nice career, but This isn't new. You know, he's not going to play. And Gagne was blown away by that. He couldn't believe I was turning the story down. The Will Beatty. What would I have said in that article?
Two-time Super Bowl champion Will Beatty signs with the Eagles.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, he would have won the Super Bowl that year, right?
I'm telling you, you take a UConn tackle on day two and just watch the multiple Super Bowls roll
Wait, does Will Beatty have three rings then?
No. I don't think he stayed in Philadelphia.
He wasn't there long enough. Well, that's the story we should have written then, was when they got rid of Will Beatty early in 2017 after signing him.
Yeah, he was he did win. That's right. 2017, he won with the Eagles. He only won one Super Bowl with the Giants. All right. He missed 42.
That makes more sense.
So
now.
I'm sorry. Matt Parrott only leads to one Super Bowl for the Giants here. So you can deal with that. But yeah, Matt Parrott, developmental offensive tackle here. So they got two tackles who hopefully become their tackles of the future here. Day three, lots of defense. Darnay Holmes is very fast, the 110th pick, and sort of up and down at UCLA. But interesting guy. And we'll see. The Giants still sort of building this thing up. And obviously, the Cowboys are very good in that division, and so are the Eagles. The Eagles had probably the most controversial pick of the weekend, and we'll get to that in a second. But look, when we came into this offseason, we kind of said, boy, Eagles got to add speed. They got to add speed. And, I mean, my goodness.
We'll do it, they said.
It's absurd. Jalen Reagor, and then they took John Hightower out of Boise State, who is just a pure burner. And then they trade for Marquise Goodwin. They get DeSean Jackson back. And I'm sure someone's made the joke that that's a 4x100 relay team. But that's also not a joke. That is like a bronze medal winning 4x100 relay team, if you want to put them out there.
There was a lot of watch on this Marquise Goodwin trade. It was all these updates. You know, Goodwin trade could go down. Niners are open to Goodwin trade. Marquise Goodwin didn't play last year for them. So, I mean, it's nice they got him, and he's a speedster. Goodwin will have to beat out John Hightower, because otherwise they're going to go with the fifth-round rookie, and Hightower is going to have to beat out DeSean Jackson for significant snaps. He probably won't do that, but he'll be in the lineup. Yes, speed overall. They got speed, and last year they addressed the need to replace Will Beatty at left tackle with Andre Dillard. So they're all set there as long as he can be better against the bull rush. It's an athletic offense overall. When you look at Lane Johnson, Jason Kelsey, Andre Dillard at offensive line, a lot of speed at wide receiver, versatile tight ends, and a quarterback who will be aggressive with all of that.
And Jalen Hurts. They took Jalen Hurts. Everyone in Philadelphia. I couldn't believe how much vitriol was being spewed out on the Jalen Hurts pick. I'll just say this. And number one, Carson Wentz hasn't made it to the end of a season since his rookie year. I know people are going to say, well, he started the playoff game. But yeah, he got hurt during the playoff game. And then they had to put Josh McCown out there, who was, you know, limping around on a bad hamstring because he's my age and trying to play professional football.
He's a little younger than you, Gary, but that's all right. Go ahead.
No, we're the same age. We are absolutely the same age. Yes, same athleticism and similar success in our careers.
All right.
Jalen Hurts. You have yourself a backup quarterback. We saw what happened with Nick Foles. They probably feel pretty good about their ability to develop quarterbacks here. But more than that, I mean, look, they clearly have some sort of plan for Jalen Hurts to be involved in the offense in some way while Carson Wentz is healthy and starting and playing. So
yes,
it's too early to know what this pick is, but it's therefore too early to be so upset about this pick.
I think the pick will be some kind of form of Antoine Randall-El when he was with Pittsburgh and a former quarterback. Kind of, he was more of a receiver than Hurts, obviously, but that kind of concept, an extensive gadgetry type of pick. The problem is it's going to be hard to find enough snaps for him. Taysom Hill is the closest equivalent that we have. And he gets on the field for about half the snaps, but he's a blocking tight end at times. He's an H-back. He's a receiving tight end. Hill can do a lot more than what Jalen Hurts can do based on what it appears Hurts' skill set is entering the NFL right now.
Yeah, I'll just say this, though. I mean, look, they're the same size. Taysom Hill, and I'm not sitting here saying the Eagles really like the thought of Jalen Hurts blocking and tackling on special teams, but you know, Taysom Hill, if you watched him in college, you would have just said, like, oh, that's like right-handed Tim Tebow. That's a quarterback who can't really throw. What are they going to do with him? And this is what they did with. I don't think anyone would have looked at Taysom Hill coming out of BYU and said, like, oh, this, you know, here's a special teams ace and a potential like H-back tight end type of guy.
Yeah, you make a great point. I'll be honest, I didn't realize Jalen Hurts was as thick as he was. He's 6'1", 222, it looks like. He doesn't, and maybe I'm, tell me if I'm wrong. My eyeball test doesn't seem to say that's what he is.
I used to think the same thing about him. I did not think he was that big until I saw the measurements before the combine when he went to Oklahoma, because I was kind of curious about his NFL prospects at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not being snarky or anything here. Maybe he wears different padding than Taysom Hill, because Taysom Hill looks big. I'm surprised Hill's not 230, 220-something is his weight, low 220s. So, yeah, maybe you're on to something there. Maybe I need to expand my thinking on it. We know this, Gary. Philadelphia would not make this pick unless they had a clear plan in mind right now of what they're going to do with Jalen Hurts. And they're not going to tell us what the plan is. They're a secretive team, for one, but for two, it makes, even if they were a blabbermouth team or a media friendly team, they still shouldn't tell anybody. That's good trade information that they have in their hands right now.
And
can I give you my Josh McCown story real quick?
Yeah. Definitely.
I told this a few years ago. Do you remember the story?
No.
I saw Josh McCown at the combine. I guess I can say it now because everybody's moved on. He was meeting with the Bears staff. So it was Adam Gase as a coordinator, and then John Fox was a coach. Ryan Pace was the GM. So McCown had come into, sometimes at the combine, every once in a while, you'll see a player, Frank Gore, I saw a few years ago, just sitting there in the lobby. They come in if they're still unsigned or they're looking at long-term contracts, like a two-year extension type of deal. Anyway, McCown was in town talking a contract. Maybe I'm not supposed to say this at all, because it may have been a tampering meeting. But they were at the Hyatt eating a fancy breakfast at the Hyatt restaurant. What would you have guessed Josh McCown wore to that meeting? Specifically, what kind of footwear?
Crocs.
It's a good guess. You want to take another one? It's. I'll tell you this. It's a good guess, and it's way off. Both.
Not Birkenstocks.
No. Combat boots.
Whoa.
Like a goth. Like those kids from the mall when you were young. Yeah. That you'd see at the mall. Yeah. And they were the kind that went up. Almost like up over most of his shin.
Really?
Yeah, these were heavy duty boots.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good on him.
Yeah.
And with that, we go on to Davion Taylor, the linebacker from Colorado. Davion Taylor is also just incredibly fast. They have, whenever they do a track meet, if they decide to do track meets instead of football games this year, the Eagles are going to just blow everyone away. Davion Taylor, Colorado linebacker, 4.3-something guy, just incredibly fast track athlete, and just a raw football player. He didn't play high school football, or I should say, I believe he appeared in one game, but he was a Seventh-day Adventist, and they did not participate in football because of the schedule. And then Kayvon Wallace, kind of a big slot guy, safety type of dude from Clemson. So, I don't know. I think the Eagles are in good shape. I don't think they had desperate needs. I really like adding Darius Slay and Javon Hargrave during the free agency period. And, yes, Jalen Hurts is a luxury pick. I didn't really have a problem with it. I'm not going to say it's great, but I just didn't have a big problem with it. And apparently everyone just wants to, just punch Howie Roseman in the back of the head or something.
Well, and I always struggle to criticize individual picks because, again, these teams, they know so much more about who these guys are, what they need, all the variables that go. These teams have infinitely more information than we do, so who are we to ever criticize an individual pick? I do think it's fine to analyze a draft and look at the concept of it, but it's hard to ever say you should not have taken that guy. Take this guy instead. Who do you tell that to?
No, I'm with you. I was just surprised at how upset
of course,
Eagles fans.
Yeah, no, and I guess if we didn't do that, if we didn't have that freedom, none of us would have jobs too. So maybe I need to backtrack a little bit on that, but. Let's play it out. Let's see what they have in mind for Jalen Hurts, and then we'll analyze it. I was surprised by the pick, though. I'll say that.
Okay. I was just surprised by the I was surprised by the pick, too. I was just surprised by the reaction to the pick, especially for the team that just won the Super Bowl 2 years ago with a backup quarterback. I thought you'd be a little bit more not excited, yep. but just sort of understanding of what might be going on. But like I said, Jalen Hurts is going to have a role outside of backup quarterback, and we'll see what that is. That brings us to the last team of our draft extravaganza. That is Washington. Chase Young obviously became the second overall pick. That kind of surprised no one. They have a chance to have a really good pass rush there. Day two, 65th pick, Antonio Gibson. I've seen him listed as a running back somewhere, a receiver somewhere. I would think running back in Washington. And honestly, I think he's a really good running back. I think he's a really good running back prospect. I think he's a guy who early on you'll put him on the field on passing downs, and I think he can become much more than that. I think down the line he might be a three-down sort of lead your committee type of guy.
And the Redskins have seen over the years how valuable Chris Thompson has been to them when he's been available, and really how much the offense was reduced when he was unavailable. Different system, different team, all that stuff. Now, I get that. Same uniforms, though. But the point is having the dynamic running back, that can do a lot to help, especially a young quarterback, because those running back routes, it's going to be a limited route tree just by nature. You can't run every route out of the backfield. You can only run a certain number. And even if Gibson gives them a weapon there, and I think they'll use him in more ways than just that, but even if he's only that kind of weapon, that'll be important for Dwayne Haskins, especially considering that they really don't have a starting caliber tight end on the roster. So they need some kind of, you have to have a matchup piece somewhere in the offense. If you don't have it at tight end, you need it at receiving back.
Yeah, they ended up signing Randy Moss's son, Thaddeus Moss, in the free agency period. And I'm not sitting here saying, well, now they have a tight end that they got this undrafted free agent. But
you're kind of saying that a little bit.
It's more that is more of a factoid. You accused me of a factoid of my Los Angeles Chargers sort of Super Bowl fodder on the last show, but that is a factoid. They signed Thaddeus Moss, and I don't know, Thaddeus Moss probably would have been drafted if not for a foot injury that sort of kept teams from getting a good look at him. But Trent Williams is gone. They end up taking Sadiq Charles, LSU offensive tackle, who they hope will one day grow into that left tackle spot. And everyone loves Antonio Gandy-Golden because he's the Liberty receiver, really big dude. I don't want to pick on someone, especially because I don't remember who the analyst was, but someone gave him a Calvin Johnson comp.
Oh, well, look, when they're doing that, they're doing that stylistically. Don't be a fanboy on it. We've all dealt with those kind of people. You know that. But yeah, I agree. I would not have the gall to do that, even if I'm saying stylistically because of what you just did.
But Gandy-Golden, I don't know, he's like he had a bunch of neat factoids up in the screen when they took him. He's a gardener, and I think he bowled like a 300 game, and he's a guitarist, and probably the most interesting draft pick, I'd say, since Clay Harbor.
There you go. You worked it back in. Nice job there.
That's how you wrap up a trilogy. And by the way, I honestly don't remember if Clay Harbor was drafted, but he had a fine couple years.
He did, and I don't know where he is now. We don't need to find. I mean, I'm going to Google it, but we can end the show.
That's next week's trivia question. Oh man,
he's on something called Team 9. Oh, XFL. That was I guess that's the team name on Wikipedia or something.
Okay, all right.
So there, all right.
He's out there. He's doing all right. We think. Andy, I'm so glad he did this with it. This was a fun three shows. I think for the first time ever, we actually spaced these out properly so that we didn't want to just kill each other by the end of
it. Yep. We had some long Sundays in the past, and this was nice. This was great to spread it out over several shows. I'm with you on that.
And same as Shelby Royson, our producer, also, as far as we know, does not wish us any particular harm now that this is all over. I will say, I just remember the 1 year Lou Pellegrino was still our producer at that point, probably 2 or 3 years ago, and we needed multiple bathroom breaks during the podcast because it was just so long, and we thought it was never going to end.
Yep, I remember that. Yeah, that's kind of the year. That was a Sunday afternoon I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm. Well, Andy, once again, we thank you for joining us as our special guest, and I feel this is just goodbye for now.
Yep, I'll talk to you at some point in the near future, I'm sure, Gary.
All right. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is me, Gary Gramling, and special thanks once again to Andy Benoit for joining us for the NFL Draft Recap Trilogy. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive and producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Keep up with our entire line of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL Podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.